Hey, everybody, Code Pen Radio 406. 406. That's for you that missed the number stations intro. But
nobody
you
misses
know, time's
that.
Gotta change. Nobody misses it. Okay. It was like a weird whim. It's like I listened to one podcast about it once and I was like, we should do that for like 10 years. That's how I roll sometimes. Marie's on. Hi, Marie.
Hey, everybody.
Is this your first time back since the gap?
Nah, I was the first one back
you
on
were the
after
first
the
one.
Gap.
We're circling around.
Yep.
Yeah, we're circling back. So you'll be on every, I don't know, you'll probably be my most regular guest, actually, because
yeah.
You're just my faithful sidekick.
Everybody misses me, I'm sure.
Deeply. This used to be your show, really.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So Marie, among her many things she does at CodePen, is like keep an eye on social stuff, what's going on, doing lots of the pics, which still get sprinkled into the feeds that we do on CodePen, as well as produces the Spark and the challenges, and really has a strong idea of what's going on. You should see her secret dashboards that unearth amazing CodePen content from the bowels of a Postgres database. Very impressive stuff. But because she knows so much about kind of, you know, whatever, finger on the pulse stuff of CodePen, we are going to do what's hot so far in 2025. This year, we're over halfway through it. So that's fun. But it's kind of like the halfway point-ish. Things will heat up in the once, you know, we always, you always remind us that when school starts again, there's kind of a uptick in activity.
Yeah. The beginning of September is like the new year a lot of the time because, you know, the summertime, most of the Northern Hemisphere takes some time off and is away from their desks and thinking about how much time they really want to spend on the computer. And then September rolls around, the weather starts getting cooler, and everybody remembers how much they love the computer.
So some of the, like, you know, the trends on CodePen are driven directly by Marie because you'll pick, like, a theme, and if the theme is popular enough, you'll see just tons of pens around whatever the theme for the challenge of that week is. So that's happening. We don't need to talk about that. We could do a whole episode on challenges, probably. We're talking about more general kind of stuff, and we can point out some of the very hottest pens. You know, at the end of the year, we do the best of kind of thing, and so we can, I don't know, tease some of the contenders, although who knows? Who knows? Anybody can get unseated.
As we always know, things can change, especially as things start to pick back up closer to the end of the year. In previous years, we've had people get on the top 100 with a pen they made in like mid-December. So you never know.
That's wild. Fat tail or fat head.
What?
As the, you know, like if you're charting when you get the hearts over time,
you get
the most of them at the beginning. Okay, so here's some things that are hot in CSS. Or I already ruined it. Hot. I mean, obviously CSS is involved because, you know,
well,
there's only so many languages.
We are a front end site. Yeah.
Right.
So something that's worth talking about here about CSS is I have to say in the last 2 years thereabouts, more stuff that people have been begging for years has finally landed than in any 2 year period I can remember before that. There is so much cool stuff coming out right now, and people are only just beginning to really play with it. We have, of course, a couple of heavy hitters who are putting out tons of really, really useful information and tutorials and, of course, pens. But yeah, all these brand new things have just come out, and people are just now starting to tinker with it, and it's super exciting to see. So, like, you know, the week that we're recording right now, custom functions just landed in CSS, and Una Kravitz has a tremendous video about it, a great blog post that explains, you know, a couple of really cool things you can do with it. We have if functions. They came out recently, you know? So, like, functions are here. And that's
oh my gosh,
deal.
It's so much.
It's
functions are interesting because it's one, they represent one value, which I guess makes sense, but it's, I don't know, it's niche, you know, like you can write a bunch of code and stuff and then you call it and what you're going to get out of it is just like a little nugget, one little value. You're not even a key value pair, not a big block of stuff, nothing like that. Just, you know, you can make an add function that adds two numbers and you get back the added number. So it's weird to see in CSS because you're like, how does that, you know, like you're just so used to that being like a JavaScript thing. And that CSS like doesn't have kind of a top to bottom execution order in the way you think about JavaScript. So that's awkward. You know, it's not like it runs the first line, then it runs the second line, then it runs the third line, and then it can have a break or something like that. So the way that the function works has this result is one of the values, like margin would be, not values, one of the properties. And whatever the value of result, the property is what the function returns, which could be on the first line of the function or whatever. It's just strange to look at, but it is very, you know, it's, I will just blanketly say it's a powerful idea.
Yeah. And it's brand new. So we've only just begun to see what it can do. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Right. Right. And of course, Yuna is all over it with like some of the base use cases. But I think you are very right, Marie, in that when stuff like this drops, it just needs time. It might need a year. It might need 2 years of people to be like, oh, yeah, that's where that thing really shines. And it might even be longer now because so much stuff happens so fast that it's like, I almost forgot about that. Like, did you know you can animate to auto values. Now, you never used to be able to do that from like a totally collapsed element. Just be like, animate to however big you naturally are on the web is never something you were able to do. It was like, no, I don't know how to animate to an unspecified value. You can animate 0 to 50. You can animate 0 to 1500, but you can't animate 0 to whatever height that element would naturally be based on the content in it. I don't think that's on our list right now, but for example, it's like that one got like so slipped in there. It's like all of a sudden you could just do that now that it's not even like on these lists.
There have been like several like little subtle things that have come out that are just making things cooler and basically like more concise when you're writing your CSS. There are things that you can just do briefly that used to take a lot of code. So that's pretty exciting.
Totally. So you were talking about custom functions. That's like ones that you write yourself.
Yeah.
You know, Marie's cool function, but there's a bunch of named functions as well. You know, there's actually like kind of a ton of them now, but you mentioned if is like logic. So again, it's functions are values. So it would be like margin colon if, you know, and then you'd write stuff. And that means that the margin that you're about to set can have a variety of conditions will happen. And one of those will get returned. And I think there's like if and else if and all the stuff you'd expect from it. But it ends up just being a kind of a nice terse way of saying like, I want the margin to be 40 pixels unless the viewport is pretty narrow. And then I want it to be 20 pixels. That is like expressible now in one little expression rather than setting it, then writing a media query, then resetting margin, which is just a lot more typing and stuff. So if is interesting to see. And that's like the most basic use case. Again, who the heck knows what people like, you know, Tamani Afif and stuff will do with if, who knows?
Totally. Yeah. Well, speaking of Tamani, the next thing I wanted to talk about actually is the stuff going on with clip path shape. That's exciting. That's going to lead to so many cool things. And Tamani Afif is doing an incredible amount of tutorial work and just really, really good pen demos that show off exactly what you can do with it. And not just like cool artistic, like, oh, look at this cool shape, but like literally like practical, you know, shape cutouts and stuff like that. So that's...
Yeah.
A very...
You know, it's one-to-one with SVG path. Like, there's these converters now, and you just take any SVG that exists in the whole world and drop it in there, and like, oh, here it is in CSS, too.
Oh, sick. I did not know that. That is
what?
Cool. Yeah.
I spent a long time. I have a book about SVG, and I spent a long time telling people, like, yeah, you can kind of, like, use path in CSS, too, but it's very hamstrung. Because they really just shoehorned it in and forgot about it, kind of. Not to, like, be shady against the people who did that work. I'm sure, you know, priorities are priorities, as we all well know and all that. But the path syntax in SVG is this long string of unitless numbers. It'll just be, like, 117.43 space 49.2 space blah, blah, blah. It's just these indecipherable chunk of numbers. And then letters that go with it that say, I want it to be a curve. I want it to be a straight line. Pick up the pen and move it over here and stuff. But because those numbers were unitless, which made lots of sense in SVG, which had its own coordinate system, when you move that to CSS, it just doesn't work. And so the browser was like, how about pixels? So we just got pixels, and pixels do not scale.
Mm.
So what we, that now shape drops. And I remember when it came out, it was like in some Safari release notes I saw, and I was like, wait, what is this? You ported all of SVG Path to, and they like modernized it as they moved it too. Like there was like a, to make a curve in SVG is just like lowercase c or something. And there's like, you know, there's like eight of different types of curves you can mathematically draw or something. And what does C mean? That sucks. So when it moved over to CSS, now it's like curve two or something is the keyword. And you're like, oh, thank you. You used a real word like nice. CSS yeah. would do, you know? So it just looks, it looks like a very understandable, beautiful syntax, and it is. And so now we're seeing it on CodePen, right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And then a kind of like a companion to that, although it's not the same thing, is corner shape and then the super ellipse. I love the super ellipse. It just sounds exciting. You
know? It does sound exciting.
And there's a real good, we linked it in the Spark not too long ago, but Amit Sheen did a great article about it for Front End Masters that digs in deep.
He's just crushing it lately.
Yes, he is.
His brain works in interesting ways. We got to hang out at when I went to Amsterdam.
Oh, how cool.
So it's good to, it's gonna, oh, there was a, it was like a, Those are, I mean, it was CSS Conf, so it ought to be, but holy cow, where the CSS heroes were out in
nice.
Good shape at that thing. Yeah, super ellipse is fun. Imagine like the upper right corner of a div or something, and then it has a corner radius on it. Okay, fine. Or border radius. They list that as one of the mistakes of CSS, you know, that they should have never called it border radius. They should have called it corner radius.
Yeah, I guess I agree.
Yeah. So now they're calling it corner shape, not to fix that mistake, but to like, I don't know, not make the same mistake again, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So corner shape, and then it just has these values like, oh, do you want the Battlestar Galactica corners or whatever? Okay, you can have that. But imagine what a normal border radius looks like if you put like a point on the where it starts to curve and another point where it stops to curve. You know, the curve looks almost like, imagine it's like a jump rope that's stretched around that corner, and then imagine that jump rope starts spinning, you know, and you can have lots of jump rope or less jump rope, you know, if, it could be super tight, that's the Battlestar Galactica corner, or it could be super sloppy or whatever. That's if you, any curve you can draw between those two points I just described is expressible with the super ellipse.
The super ellipse. I love it.
Yeah. Really cool. It's like,
yes.
And I like how they gave us a bunch of really practical ones. They gave us the squircle one, which is like Apple made cool. You know, it's like a, it's like border radius, but it's hard to describe, but like chilled out.
Yeah. It's kinda. And there's like a mathematical definition of what a squircle is. It's not just like a designer thing, which is just something I learned doing a challenge recently. It's just like, it's a real thing. There's a real squircle. So they can, you can
there's
make
a real squircle, but there's a real squircle Apple squircle.
Yeah.
There's even some debate on what qualifies, but it's nice you can do it. And Super Ellipse, being very mathematical, can do them all. But they just give you a little keyword to do it,
mm-hmm.
which is nice. But I love it when web platform features do this. They give you the kind of the primitive that those keywords use under the hood. So not only did you get these nice, easy to use corner shapes, but you also get the Super Ellipse, you know, like the primitive, which is neat.
Yeah, totally. It's very exciting as someone who remembers when corners used to be made with little like GIF cutouts that to see this type of thing happen now, you know? This is really cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Those were the days. So, and people do this stuff too, right? It's not like, oh, this is a new thing on the web platform that you should know of. It's almost like you know of it because you see it.
Yeah.
People totally. Actually doing it on
yes,
GoPen,
absolutely. Yeah. That's the coolest thing is to just encounter it at work. That's pretty exciting. Like the attribute, the new changes to the attributes, mm-hmm. that's also very exciting. We just did a Spark all about it. There's just so much stuff you can do with the attribute, the typed attribute method.
Right.
Really expands the possibilities there.
I feel like I spent most of my career telling people what you can't do with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was so limited because you could only ever, you know, use it for content. Yeah,
it's exactly. a string. And what the hell do you need a string for? And then the accessibility people are like, don't use it for strings either because it's not accessible.
Oh,
so it's like, okay, it's useless then essentially.
Yeah.
People would say, oh, you could do a tooltip with it, you know, and then that's what you'd get in trouble for because like don't bury your content in CSS. You know, that's like not like an appropriate
yeah, that makes
thing
sense.
To do.
Yeah.
Or either that or you put it on there accessibly and then you and you duplicate it. So it, ugh, there was no good answer for it. And now it's like, now you can put like a color in there and then they use the color that is specified in HTML. You can actually use it as an actual color in CSS. Now that's about the most basic use case it can possibly be. But that cross language communication is just interesting.
It is. It really is. That's another one where it's like, that one's going to take a little time to percolate. And I think people are going to start to tinker with it and be like, oh, okay, I just came up with another use case for this. So I'm super excited to see what happens there.
That's right, Murray. I really think you're right about that, is that it's easy to look at it and be like, oh, finally, that long, weird thing is gone. But it doesn't, you don't immediately see the full world of possibilities that this unlocks. You know, although you just don't know yet.
Whoever proposed it definitely knows.
Yeah, they knew.
They knew.
I think of it as like a styling API that's interesting in a little bit of a way of why Tailwind is interesting. So you could do something like, I don't know, data color red, and you could use red as a color value if you want to, but you can also grab that red and like, you don't have to use it as red.
Right.
You can read it and then be like, I'm going to make sure that it's like within the red color bounds of this design system using like color functions to manipulate it, or red really maps to this other color value and I can do that now. It doesn't have to be data font size 36 pixels and then you take the 36 pixels and just plop it on there. It can be, but now that you have like programmatic access to it, you have a little bit more like a level of finesse control that you didn't have before. I think it'll be interesting. I think design systems are bound to use it.
Definitely. It's an exciting time. Like it's such a great time to be writing front-end code. We have this tremendous web platform that we can do so much stuff with it, and it's only getting better.
Yeah. That's a cool time. Good thing we, you know, have an app for that.
Yeah.
So there's styles, right? Like trends is maybe another way to put it that come around. You can't avoid the Apple's thing, even though they haven't even shipped the thing yet. And that's controversial as all get out. But Liquid Glass is a little unavoidable.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. That created a lot of excitement. And I thought that was really fun because just based on videos and photos that people saw of it, people were able to get it a general idea of what it was like and start to reproduce it literally day of, like the day they announced it, we were starting to see people play with it in pens. And now, of course, people have been experimenting with making glass-like textures on CodePen forever. You know, this is something that we've been working on.
So they can reach back and
for
find
a long
examples.
Time. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So there was already a lot of prior art. And then, you know, this brand new thing came out. So, of course, you know, Jay Tompkins got right on it.
Mm-hmm.
Although it was kind of funny because the crowd was like begging him. They're like, Jay, please. And he's like, no.
Help us.
You got to wait. You got to wait. And then he brings it out. And of course, you know, nails it, of course, as you'd expect.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been interesting to see people play with Liquid Glass in particular, because it has a bunch of different features to it that make it very distinct. There's obviously the transparency, but there's also like a gooey quality, like the mm-hmm. pieces will kind of blend together and merge and in that, you know, gooey movement. And then there's also, as you see at the edges, the real kind of liquefaction and the chromatic aberration that goes around the edges that gives it that almost like rainbow prismic effect, you know? So
it affects colors. It affects mm-hmm. the shape of the things you're seeing behind it. It affects, you know, the area that is glass, you know, like, I don't know, Jay really nailed it in a couple of different ways, but his doesn't, for example, like the area that's glass is like locked in. It doesn't like morph and move around,
right,
but that
yeah.
can be an aspect of it too. Another thing I like about Jay's is that he didn't go for the frosted kind of look. That's, you know, we've seen the most of that historically
because
you can
glass
just set like
forever. Yeah.
Right. Because you can just kind of blur the background and set some white on it. But I think we'll see Apple do that more and more too, because you can really see Jay's example has icons mm-hmm. that are set in the liquid glass. And thus they kind of stand up to whatever's happening behind them, okay.
Yeah.
Whereas if they were some text words, I think you could be like, that's a accessibility nightmare. You know, you wouldn't be able to see it at all. And when that happens, you see Apple more and more frosted.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So that you can see the thing. And then, and frosting is fine. I think it's a cool effect. It's just, it's not, you know, as cool, I guess, quote unquote.
Sure. But some things you don't need them to be cool. You just got to be able to use them. So,
well,
I,
right. You know,
I can see.
That's tricky because it's like if it's 100% about usability, then don't do it at all. You know, there is a cool factor.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, that's, I think, the design dilemma always is how cool can we go before this is just art and not actually useful, yeah. You know?
But I did. You put a whole Spark together on it, and then I ended up doing my own little version of all the cool examples of it. CodePen really is a good place to look at all the different takes on it.
Yeah. And, of course, ever since then, there's been additional work on it. People have refined it even further and kind of taken it in different directions. Just that glass is kind of being worked with again entirely is pretty cool. You know, not just, oh, I'm going to do liquid glass, but I'm going to do glass. I'm going to play around with glass. So that's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a great name. I mean, that's probably a good chunk of why people are attracted
glass,
to it.
Liquid glass, you know, it's got
what
that
a, cool,
like,
word.
It's like, yeah. Sounds like an album title. You know, it's just, it's a good, it's good thing to bring
yeah.
in.
Yeah, liquid glass animals.
Liquid swords.
What's another one?
Oh, the one that I'm enjoying, this one's really interesting, is like hard glitch, like really, really glitching stuff. You know, like... data mosh look, you know, putting a magnet on top of a television type of look. That's been really interesting. Yeah, there's been a couple of people who have been doing some really cool stuff with that. Josh Dillon has done a bunch of like button effects and UI with like real hard, you know, 80s style glitch on it. Let's see, what's the name of the other guy? There's a new guy. He's really good. Philip Zernzevic. He is doing some really interesting stuff. He did one that was like a scary glitch slideshow that was like, you're like scrolling and you're going underwater, deeper and deeper underwater. And you're like about to encounter Cthulhu type of situation. Yeah. So it was like nice and scary.
Amazing.
I'm going to bring that one back around at Halloween. But I picked it, but that one's coming back at Halloween. Be ready.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm just getting to the further slides now. Yeah, there's some, you know, oh my gosh, there's some fish that live down there that are...
Yeah, it's like chilling, actually. But yeah, but it's got that hard glitch like I'm talking about, you know?
Yeah.
So that's been very interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. What a cool effect where like light glitch is fun too, and so is hard glitch, you know? I don't know. It's cool. And you'd use light glitch if you're like, you know, it's just a design effect that, that on some otherwise text that needs to be readable. But sometimes you can go so hard with glitch, especially in little bursts where you're like, no, it's actually not readable for a second.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I'm talking about. The deep distortion, you know, it's an artistic choice for sure. And it's not going to work for everything, but when it works, it works.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember this. I don't know why it's stuck in my head so much, but it was like a Jason Santa Maria thing where he designed like a candy wrapper or something. I think every Halloween he would design fake candy, or there's some kind of design challenge thing you would do. And there was some like text that probably wouldn't pass 100%, like, you know, AAA accessibility standards kind of thing. But it was like, it wasn't that bad. And it wasn't like body copy. It was just like flare text that, you know, and he wasn't like, I'm not trying to like throw away accessibility. I'm trying to say that like, the body copy of a 10,000 word New York Times article is like in a different category of mattering about readability specifically.
Right.
And that like some like slightly faded text on a candy bar wrapper is like just not the same. So
right.
Like,
well,
chill
definitely.
Out, you know?
Yeah. Because in that case, you're almost bringing the word down to a symbol, you know, like I look at a Kit Kat bar and I understand I'm seeing a Kit Kat bar without needing to necessarily read Kit Kat, you know, so it's branding more than anything else.
And if there's some extra text that said chocolatey explosion, that matters even more less.
Yeah.
Okay, what's some more?
So another thing that I'm seeing that's been very interesting is a like classic holographic texture, like the type of thing that you'd see on a like a baseball card or a trading card, the holographics when you tilt the card, or just like holographic in print is kind of coming over to the web in an interesting way. So just, you know, not holograms like Star Wars, but just like the kind of rainbow distortion on a printed thing, like it would normally be in real life printed with hot foil, but just like that hot foil look on the front end. I've seen a couple of really cool things with that.
Then like some certain baseball cards would have it, and you'd be like, "Oh, I got a foil or something," and it would be the foiled one. It's it enters my life because there's this card game on my phone that I got a little addicted to for a minute called Velatro.
Oh, I've heard of it.
Don't do it. It's I mean, it's the best. It's just an amazing game. But yeah, I lost some time to it at certain times of the day. And so, and you know, so it was a little bit like a poker game. They call it a roguelike, right? When you make, when you have to make your deck better over time or whatever.
Okay, yeah, yeah, you're making
it sound
cool.
So you play poker hands like straights and flushes and stuff, and then you'd get money when you win hands, and you use the money to buy jokers, and jokers would help your hands be even better. Mm. And a rare joker might have this cool holographic effect.
Yeah.
On it, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, maybe that's...
But any given... Yeah, maybe anyway, that's beautiful.
That could be what reintroduced it, you know?
Yeah, maybe it was pretty dang popular as a game. I love it. Holographics.
Yes.
You got grainy textures on here. Yeah, I've definitely seen grain be cool.
Yes, and so grainy texture... been around for many years at this point. Of course, everybody's been doing grainy textures, but there's been some refinement to it. Anna Tudor, of course, one of the greatest of all time, has been doing some really interesting work with gradients, like gradient blobs and stuff like that, and just kind of really making it it's weird to say elegant for graininess, but it almost elegant graininess.
Because it's light grain.
Yeah. You know?
I'm sure that there's some knobs you could turn to make it more intense, but yeah, it's kind of neat that I see these blobs. You know, maybe at first read you wouldn't even notice the grain,
right?
But the graininess, when you do, it does kind of take it to a next level thing. Always kind of some irony in that lower quality being cool, you know?
Yeah, well, it's like it always becomes like a artifact of its time, so you can sort of make something look vintage, or I think also just like more real. Like for a long time, you know, we had very, very flat design was the dominant style. And so grain just kind of brings it back to like a tactile vibe.
Oh, yeah. They would never in flat design, right?
Too
flashy.
Because flat was kind of a response to the grunge and the, you know, the, what was it called? Skeuomorphism that came before.
Yeah.
You know, it was just the exact opposite.
The dial got turned to 1,000. On day one of flat design.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like we started to get flatter. They're just like, nope.
No, it's just like, it's flat now, okay? Everybody, let's do flat.
I remember talking to my mom about the history of printing. I wish I could get her for a show. I mean, I could, but I almost want to do it good justice, you know, like a history of printing thing. And
that'd
found
be awesome.
It so funny when letterpress got more popular, kind of the almost like the hipstery kind of letterpress, you know, what people would do for their wedding invite now, you know, you'd go to a letterpress shop and they'd use like a thick paper and then they'd really smash it with the letters, right? So you could even feel it with your finger, feel that. And she's like, that's so ridiculous. It's cool. Like I get that it's a trend now, but there's like 100 years of printing history where the goal of it was to just barely kiss the paper.
Right.
So it didn't leave an impression on the paper. Like the aesthetic goal was to not do that.
Yeah. It is so funny because I think probably what I would guess is that that was representative of a technological limitation, because when you're a hand setting type, that's, you know, that's how a letterpress would work.
Yeah, you just had to do that way.
It
so it's
slow.
Like a symbol of quality that this isn't your schlubbin letterpress. This
right,
is
exactly. Yeah, it was slow.
This is a fancy press.
Extremely error prone. And, you know, it was just a completely laborious process. So eventually that became like luxurious. Like you say, I mean, you only see it on very special paperwork now, you know. But yeah. I mean, there was a time when it was luxurious to just say, oh, look at what we have, laser printing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that aesthetic will just forever change.
Absolutely.
For now, we have grainy blobs, and they're very beautiful. Good job, Anna.
Yeah, you know, people get tired of materials and shun them, and then eventually someone else picks up the same old material, and it's like, I can do something with this.
And kind of those blurry blobs are also kind of, especially on dark, are still kind of the official look of AI, I'm afraid.
Yeah. So that's, that's something worth talking about, isn't it? There's a couple of different ways you could say the official look of AI. There is the official look of, you know, we're an AI-powered company and this is our AI-powered thing. They all, of course, have a very distinct look. But then there's also the official look of each of the LLMs in terms of like what they generate when someone asks them for code.
Interesting.
You see enough of them and you can start to tell them apart, like, no problem. Like Gemini has a very, very distinct look that it uses blue, like almost to a ridiculous level, which I think is kind of funny.
Oh my gosh. That's funny. So I definitely can think of some that I've used that are very blue. So
yeah, exactly. So just, I mean, not for nothing, if you're listening and want to get picked, I know what the LLMs are doing. I know what it looks like. and I'm not going to pick stuff that's made with an LLM. Plenty of people are getting assistance from LLMs, of course. But I can smell it from 100 paces, baby.
how the cards lined up for our new editor is going to be like, we didn't even necessarily plan it this way, but it's really ready for your LLM output. Gemini will barf out a complete, it likes to work in one document.
It does.
So it'll give you this one document. Our new editor is a lot more friendly to a one document approach because it has the whole doc type and everything in the HTML. If you want it to be that way, we'll have more to say about that coming forward. And it supports Tailwind, and all of these LLMs are Tailwind.
Boy, are they
up
ever.
Up to their britches.
And now what does that tell us?
What does it tell us? Tell me what it tells us.
Well, you know, we as human beings over-optimized for the machine. We've been doing it for, 20 years. As long as I've been working on the web, we've been trying to optimize everything so that the machine loves us, right? So we've made everything very easy for the machine to digest and handle. It was also very easy for things like Tailwind to be adopted by and understood by machines. And so, yeah, of course, that's what it's handing back to us. Because first of all, they think we love it because we were using a ton of it. And second of all, it understands it very clearly. So, yeah. We did this to ourselves, folks. Sorry to say.
Yeah. Whatever. I can live with it. It's interesting to me that there was so much Tailwind code publicly available that it became the default styling for LLMs. Like, what a time to hit, baby. Mm-hmm. And how is there not a ton of code that was trained on before Tailwind existed? You think there'd be much more of that? I don't quite get it.
So I don't think that it's necessary that they were like, oh, there's more of this. I think it was just like, this is ideal and it's emerging now, so this is what people want right now. It's like, okay,
like secretly prompted. Not, I don't mean to make it like under the hood or whatever, but we know that there's prompts that are like pushed into these LLMs like at a core level, and perhaps the Cody ones is like, when people ask for code, you should probably lean Tailwind.
Yeah, that's very possible, but I see it in another spot. Like, have you noticed when you see like when someone has made a picture with an LLM and it's like, you know, a cartoon drawing of a person or whatever, they're like real yellow and they kind of have like a, they have like a sort of like almost related to the Studio Ghibli style in the illustration, you know? And I think what happened was, and this is just a guess, but you know, tons and tons of people did that Studio Ghibli generation. And I think the LLM was like, oh, the people they love.
You like these? We can do these.
They love this. And so it's just like, okay, so now everything is like sepia toned and just very, very, very samey. And so again, it's got a smell on it that you can just detect from from across the street, you know? So I do wonder if it's just a feedback loop, the Ouroboros of the snake eating its own tail, you know?
I've been trying to get better at it. I just had to play with it the other day in Photoshop, which is a fun place for it because you can, like, here's one difference in it is that you can, like, select with, like, the lasso or just, like, the, you know, rectangle selection tool in Photoshop, like, a part of a photo and then say, do something to this part of the photo, which is, like, I don't know. It's, like, built into the tooling of Photoshop in a way that you couldn't just do that in ChatGPT or whatever, you know, you'd have to describe, you'd be like, have the painter raise his arm higher or something. Mm-hmm. It's like, now it has to redo the whole photo.
Right.
You're like, leave most of this photo alone. Just in this area, do that. That's kind of cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess I have no further point there. But.
Well, you know, just going back to AI and LLMs and all of that type of stuff, of course, this is part of the front end world now. It's going to be part of the coding world, period. That's just how it is. I think now, if you are interested in the front end, if you want to be part of the future of the front end, you need to develop taste. You need to have a personal style and develop taste. You can get an LLM to make whatever for you. That's true. But you need to be able to tell what looks good, why it looks good, and why you want it to be that way. And also, while you're at it, if you're playing around in the front end, try all this new stuff. You know, if you want to learn how to do it, now is a wonderful time. We've simplified so much. We've made it so much easier to do. It's like there's a kabillion resources out there to get you going, you know. It's an awesome time to be expressing yourself on the front end. And there's tons of places where you can just make whatever you want, whatever you want to see. We have it, like, think about the browser as more than just inside of your phone. Think about it as more than just on your desktop. Your browser can be almost infinite. You can make a map of the whole world, you know? So, something to think about.
It makes me think that that's so true and has always been true, in a way, you know?
Oh, like, absolutely. Yeah, the people who have excelled in this have always had taste and have always had a design sensibility. Even the people who are primarily coders, and there's plenty of people who favor coding and will just, you know, take designs and recreate them or work with a designer, they are still exhibiting their taste because they have chosen what designs to emulate or what designer to work with. Right. Taste is a big thing. And if you want to get good at this, you need to work on those taste buds.
And it's a constant journey, I'll say too. Like, I think it's dangerous to be like, yeah, I got to work on my taste. And then Thursday you're like, okay, I think I got my taste down.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Your taste will shift over time.
Right.
The goal is,
as sad as this is it's like a carrot thing. Like, it should constantly be a little ahead. You should always be like a little unsatisfied with your own output.
Oh yeah. I do think,
I don't know how to impart that in someone.
I do think that's the sign of someone who's getting better, is someone who's always like, oh, I could have done that better. Yeah, you could next time, you're gonna. So that's just how it works. But it's like building a muscle, and, you know, but it's more fun, I'd say, than building a muscle.
True. I'm just back from the gym. It wasn't very fun.
Yeah.
Do you want to do the top four, or you want to save it?
No, let's talk about those. Okay. So these are not actually technically the top four, but these were four hot ones from this year so far that I just wanted to call out real quick. This one, we have brought it up a couple times in the Spark and also social media, but Peter Knoll did a glass button in February, which was very much ahead of its time, I have to say. And that one's been really, really popular this year. I would not be surprised if that one's number one at the end of the year, but we'll see. Again, the horse race is still running.
We'll see.
Yeah.
See, that's a good example of, I don't know, like, light refracts in weird ways.
Yeah.
And on this button, it's a little unexpected, I would say, what happens to the light when you click it. Not weird. It's not, you're not like, I wouldn't expected that to happen. You're like, yeah, that looks like glass.
Yeah, it does. It's.
But you couldn't have guessed it before you rolled over it.
It's nice and subtle, too. I really do like that one. Another one that's real interesting, that this one blew up on social media before we even picked it. This got very popular very quickly. Mike Bespalov did a monospace ASCII art generator, and that one, he was open about it. This was vibe coded. So it was, you know, just something that he worked on with an LLM. But if you look at that one, that's not just do this for me and it got barfed out exactly like that. This, he worked on that. And that's, it's a fun thing. You know, you just pop something in and get some ASCII art on the other side. Very cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. It's so cool. I can't even deal with it.
And then, of course, you know, good old Cobra Winfrey, he made the macro data refinement. He actually updated it for the new season of Severance. And,
so classy.
It's great. God. It has that perfect, what are the lines called? I forget. Anyhow, the lines across, scan lines across the numbers and everything. And it's just like, it's exactly like the interface. If you're having a Severance Halloween party or something, you want to be using that.
This is killing me. It's, I hadn't clicked it enough. Yeah, it's, it makes me miss Severance now. Oh my gosh. It's so cool. Hi, Adam. Good job.
Yes. And then another very cool one, which I feel like this one's flown under the radar a little more than it should have. I really do like this one a lot from Steve Gardner. It's called Who Needs Shaders? And it's just HTML and CSS kind of like manipulating, I think it's Base64 strings to create a shader-like look with HTML and CSS. So I don't know exactly how practical this is, but it's sick.
Yeah, I wonder what the performance is. It seems fine.
It seems
okay. I'm on my bitchin' Mac studio, so it's hard to know.
Old and dumpy old iMac because
it's also fine.
It looks great. Yeah.
Okay, way to nail it, Steve. Jeepers.
Yeah, totally.
And also with the kind of the perfect, because I don't know, there's a handful of people that rock shaders, and fortunately a lot of Muse Code Pen, thank you, we'll try to make the new editor extra good for you. I already know that it is in a lot of number of ways, but you've seen some of their pens. They kind of have to I think the script types that they use, there has to be like a type on the script attribute, so they have to write it in the HTML area instead of the whatever. They have to do a little stuff that will be less necessary going forward. But they're also like, it's just, even if you sat down and you're like, I am going to learn shaders, you will be, you know, disappointed. It's like, it can be done, obviously, but it does take a special brain to do it. So when Steve says, who needs shaders, I'm sure that appeals to somebody like me who's been put in his place many times trying to learn how to do a shader.
The world of shaders is amazing. And the people who are creating shader art on CodePen are some of the best out there, for real. You know, I mean, there's people who are showing in museums that aren't as good as these people. I will just say that. I'm not going to name names. But you know who I'm thinking of.
I love that. Yeah, Picasso. I get it.
the famous shader artist, Pablo Picasso.
All right. Well, thanks for doing this. This was really fun. We'll check in, of course, at the end of the year when we're showing off more content.
Yeah, we get to do the top 100.
Yeah. And we should get some of these people on too. It's always, you know, this show is always a work in progress. Of course, the overall goal is going to be talking about the new editor and the technological choices and the possibilities and stuff, just because it's on all of our minds so much. We just have to get it out there. But then once it's out, surely we'll be speaking more with individual users of it, seeing what people are doing with it. Speaking of not knowing what people are going to do with it.
Yeah.
Jeepers.
Well, that's the thing. Like I said earlier, you know, the front end world is changing a lot. Mm-hmm. Now's a great time to get in.
Sure is. All right. Thanks, Marie.
Bye, everybody.